Ways and Means Committee, Education Subcommittee, June 22nd, 1999. Hearing reacts.
You guys, please, that's extremely fascinating.
We are going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1329. Senator,
you have my favorite.
Mr. President,
thank you, Madam Chair. Today I bring before you Bill 1329, which is a concept that I believe will allow a vehicle for more interaction between parents and their schools. And I think that's in everybody's best interest. Basically, what it's built on is the idea of establishing a report card on schools where the schools would report in three general categories. That is student performance, student behavior, and school characteristics. It directs the Department of Education to establish criteria that would be measured under each of those three main areas, and to establish grades for measuring how well they do in those criteria. What you have before you is not a prescriptive, but simply a sample of what a report card might look like that was prepared for me by the Department of Education. I want to say, first of all, that's not an indication of their support for the grading concept, but they were kind enough to help me put this together. The idea is that there would be letter grades that does have some controversy associated with it. But let me speak to that if I can for a moment. First of all, we have a long history of using letter grades when it comes to education as a measurement tool. But even beyond that, we do that here in state government in one of the things that we seem to take the most pride in, and that is our Oregon benchmark. On the Oregon benchmark, we've established a series of things that we think the state ought to be measured by. And guess what? We use grades as the tool for measurement. It seems to me that you can make an argument about whether it's absolutely fair or not fair, whether it's subjective or whether it's objective. But that's what life is about. Life is not just a totally objective experience. Every day when we come to our life experiences, it is a subjective experience. It's the same thing I put in the context of my business. I have to establish an evaluation of my employees every time that I decide whether or not to change their salary. I use a scoring system. I don't have to use A, B, C, D, but I use the 1 to 100% scoring system. I try to be as objective in those that are participating as much as I can possibly do. But the bottom line is I do bring a certain amount of subjectiveness to it. I try to be fair in the process of that, allow for negotiation and discussion in regards to it. But there isn't a system that you have, other than if we're just putting out some type of widget that we can count, that doesn't have some type of judgment that you have to bring. So I don't feel embarrassed about the fact that there is that subjectivity in there. What I do feel very strongly about is this will generate communication between parents and their school. And I think that's a good thing. It has no serious or no negative consequences. I'm not taking money away from the school. I'm not punishing teachers. I'm not making anything that comes out negative of it. Other than what I say is that if a school, in whatever the categories are the Department of Education decides to measure, gets less than a C grade, they should simply file an improvement plan. They should file it with the Department of Education, obviously. They need to file it with the school district. But most importantly to me, they need to file it in with the local site council of the school so that everybody has a chance to see why is this occurring, what is it that we can do to help make it not occur. In addition to that, and the other element that I think is very important, is that we need to send this report card to the parents of every student that's in that school. And I believe that will open up, I trust the parents, and I trust the fact that they will use good judgment when they look at this, and that their involvement won't be destructive, it will be constructive. And I think that's a good thing. And so I would recommend and hope that you would consider favorably Senate Bill 1329. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions if I could possibly do this.
Any questions? Senator Carson?
Senator, thank you for bringing this before us today. And I'm extremely interested in this because, as you know, you can find expert written opinion on any position you want to take on anything dealing with public schools as far as trying to improve them. And I want to say that I hope we pass this, and I'm going to be a strong supporter on the basis that we must make our public school system work. And work better than it is. Doing a good job now, but we can do better. And I'll relate to my private enterprise life running the meat company. You know, I was scored about whether I could make a profit and stay in business. My customers were the restaurants and so forth that demanded certain things. So that's how I was scored. And so we have to find a way to demonstrate to the teachers and parents and whatnot that the customers of the public school system are our students, and we know that they all can learn given the opportunity. And so anyway, I'm very happy, and of course this isn't going to automatically improve all schools, but it's one element that should be very helpful, and so I'm happy to support this.
Thank you.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you very much, and good morning.
Good morning.
I also strongly support the measure before us. I would just argue that it doesn't go far enough. It does not include penalties for low-performing schools, and that is an issue in a part of the district that I represent, and it's certainly an issue for a large constituency of parents in the Portland area. Many of these parents are Black, Latino, and they are Southeast Asian. They are Indian parents who come together under an organization that's called the Citizens Monitoring Advisory Committee. And in fact, these same people are meeting this morning at 10 o'clock during a press conference to talk about how to increase school achievement, and they have a plan for getting more parental involvement. And they have a plan to get more business and other community-based involvement in the schools. And this is a tool. This is a tool that these activists, and I include myself among that number of activists, have been working for this kind of thing for a number of years. In fact, it's up a decade. So this is timely. It's going to be a good use. I think it's part of the accountability that. Parents deserve to know about in terms of what is happening in their school with their child. And again, I'm supportive. And if there's an opportunity to add other names to the bill at some point, I'd like to do that. Because again, there is a strong supportive community of people in the Portland area who've been waiting for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, I'd be happy to have you be a co-sponsor on
the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, for being here. Let me take a little different tack. I guess I haven't really looked at this bill for that long, and I guess I have questions about why we're doing this. I wouldn't disagree that obviously communication is extremely important. I think as a parent in the school district, those who are interested will know where their schools are. So then it's a question of sending this out to all families, whether or not that does anything, whatever that's supposed to achieve anyway, other than its information. And I think what I was a little concerned about is when you started assigning grades to certain characteristics, I don't know if that has any meaning. Grading typically means you're in a certain path towards a certain goal. I think we've had this discussion in this building about the Reform Act and certain aspects of how we're going to achieve certain levels of passing. So for example, when you had student performance here, you start assigning, and again, I know this is a sample, but when you look at the grading system, when you talk about reading, if you're in the 70th percentile or above, you're getting a C. I would say you're actually doing much better than that. It depends on what the top grade is. I would say 100% unachievable. So then if you start being more realistic and say perhaps 85 to 90% is the highest you'll ever get, and maybe that's just a difference in philosophy, then when you assign a grade, it should be... I'm not trying to look for grade inflation. I'm just saying, to me, the grading part of this is probably the most difficult for me personally, because I don't think the grades correspond to a performance per se. I mean, maybe you can make a generalization about that. It's just maybe a difference I have. I understand, not to say that it's simple, but I understand why you're saying the grades somehow correlate in our minds to a performance. There's so much more, for example, like in professional experience, teachers' average years of experience. Assigning a letter grade to experience doesn't mean you've got a good teacher. I mean, you know that. I mean, so I'm just saying there's qualitative things you're missing in here, and I'm not sure how you get at them. And I talked to the chair, and I'd like to see if I can work with you a little bit to see if there's some things we can change with the bill. And, you know, maybe you won't want to do that. But I think the grading piece, if I had any concern, it's really that piece. I think information's good. I think the public needs to know what's happening in their local school as much as they can. And then I think the second piece, which is really more incumbent upon us, and I always challenge us when we look at bills, is so what? I mean, so we do this. What is it going to do? You expect that parents and the public will be then therefore more motivated, let's just say this becomes law, to try to get involved or push their school in a certain way? And does it also motivate us? And I think, you know, given that we have become this sort of super school board, what does this mean to us? I mean, a lot of this information is already available. I'm just trying to flesh this out because I'm still struggling with the need. But, you know, what's the policy implications? Are we going to get something we want out of this other than assigning grades? And I'm helpfully skeptical, I guess, is the question.
Madam Chair, if I may respond to Representative Edwards. And I do respect the fact that there are different perspectives, and especially in the area of grading, that there's a lot of controversy associated with it. In the bill, though, what I did was I thought that the best way to establish what it is that we measure and how we go about measuring that would not be prescriptive by myself, because I don't have that expertise. What the bill calls for is a group of parents, teachers, school district boards, school administrators, and the State Board of Education to both establish what it is that we're going to measure and how we go about measuring it. My feeling is that while that may not be perfect, and I would agree that, again, there's going to be a certain amount of subjectivity that comes into it, that's a pretty good broad-based group that should have expertise when it comes to issues that you mentioned. The bill does not prescribe to them that they have to measure, for example, even though it's in the example here, the percentage of teachers with master's degree. That was just simply picked out as symbolic of the types of things that can be done. I guess I have confidence in that group being able to do a good job for measuring. But I guess to some extent that's the technicalities and maybe the tactical focus, not the strategical objective. The strategical objective on this is very simple. This process will improve communication between schools and parents. And it will make parents better informed and motivate them, I believe, to be more involved. Are there parents that are already involved? Sure, there are. Now, whether we did this or didn't, there's a core group that would stay involved in it. What we need to do is not just stay with that core group, but looking for tools to expand out beyond that. It's the same thing I get back with the Oregon Progress Board. We use letter grades on the Oregon Progress Board. We don't establish what those grades are. We did establish, I guess, to some degree, at least initially, the types of things we're measuring, but basically what we do is we look to those on the progress board and provide that advice and counsel to them. The concept on this is the same. Could you argue that on the progress board that we shouldn't have letter grades? Certainly you could make that argument. But I can tell you when you have letter grades, at least it brings a level of interest, concern, dialogue between ourselves, citizens of Oregon, in regards to whatever that particular thing is that's being measured. This could do, and I believe will do, that same thing.
Well, a couple of things, and I think I've everybody's time here, but you know, one of the things that has always concerned me about how we start measuring is, you know, unless you measure towards a goal, you don't really, you know, I guess that's always been the troubling part. I mean, the standard, one of the things by just having a static snapshot of a school is you may not be comparing what it did last time, and it may be making progress, which to me is very valuable as a parent. And, you know, I guess, again, philosophically, we may disagree about whether or not a school, I mean, for a variety of reasons, and this is where education gets so extremely complicated, is why is it that it has a low performance or whatever? And maybe, I laud you on the fact that you want to get more parents involved. I'm not sure I guess the question, if you do, whether that will make a huge difference. Some schools have parents involved, some don't. There's reasons that happens. Some people, maybe schools have a demographic that parents, all of them are working for. And I guess I get a little nervous about setting up qualitative standard, which is often hard to measure everything. And you can just do statistics like you've done in ratings, but when you start grading, I guess that was the question, is the grade relative to the district or relative to the state? Or is it, you know, I couldn't quite follow exactly relative to where they stand relative to in the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, again, I would leave that final determination up to this coalition or group of involved people in the process of doing this. Maybe it might vary. As long as we disclose what it is that we're measuring and how we're going about measuring it, that gives me some comfort. Let me speak. Well, part of the problem that I hear is, well, what happens if somebody gets a bad grade? They're going to jump to conclusions on what it's about. If the grade is less than acceptable, there has to be an improvement plan. That improvement plan is an opportunity for communication that says, you know what, maybe income levels, high unemployment in this area, maybe racial discrimination, is a factor that needs to be taken into consideration in these discussions. And it gives the school an opportunity to present the challenges that they're facing, and then, I believe, allows for a constructive dialogue. And again, the assumption I have on this that underlines this is that parents will be constructive participants in these discussions. I am not fearful of their asking questions and their willingness to get involved when they see something that at least catches their attention. So that's the purpose of what comes out. We may, again, and I do respect that we may have different views about whether or not grades are the appropriate measurement, but I do believe that grades in this case are something that will stimulate that dialogue. Let me give you an example. Do you know right now that we do measure schools? We have this. It's about a 50-page plan that we've got. How many have ever seen it? How many parents have ever seen it? There's something that happens with it. It happens within the Department of Education. It happens as an insider story. But it just doesn't bring, I guess, the energy and the involvement of a wide range of individuals at this time. I looked at it myself. It's about 40, 50 pages long. It's got a lot of really good information in it. But, boy, I'll tell you, you've got to be fairly, even if you're an interested parent, you've got to be a fairly dedicated parent to get through that. This, I think, broadens that discussion.
I guess I come back to the senator is, it isn't just parents, though. I mean, I guess as a parent, I mean, until they become more educated, quite frankly, in Portland, I would say we've got some of the most active parents across the board as anybody in the state. And the frustration many parents have is, They may be motivated, they want to help things, but they can't get us to help them. I mean, I'll be honest with you. So a lot of it is, I think the buck does have to come back here to some extent. These grades that do end up being in here, that, because I think for us, then the challenge is, if assuming that's the goal, is to get everybody to A's, assuming that's what that's kind of the overarching policy behind this, I think you got to put something on us, because just merely putting out something, I mean, I think we need to say, well, what will we do with this? Because, I guess I come back, we are the biggest determiners of the success and failure in my case, largely, on how successful schools will be. And, you know, whether it's a grade or not, we all know how well our children are being educated relative to whether it's the standards or GPA or SAT scores. I mean, the schools are actually doing a pretty good job, I think, and they can obviously do better, but I guess where I may disagree is just parent involvement, unless you give them the tools, whether, you know, whatever that is. In my case, I mean, I see a frustration amongst parents in Portland is, I mean, they've been banging their heads for the last 10 years trying to help the Portland public school system, and yet they have not, it's been awfully hard because they come down here and it's been tough. I mean, we don't have the ability to take care of ourselves. I mean, that's, we do raise our own money through foundations. But I'm just saying, I think in the end, if we're going to do this, we need to follow up with some action by us, because otherwise it's just paper, and it just, I think you're setting up, potentially setting up the school, right?
Representative
Wayne?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Adams, I support the concept, and I take a different tack, and mine is that it opens up broadly communication more than just beyond the parents involved, because it gives a message to the whole community. And it also does something else. As I look here, we're very competitive in nature as human beings, and as I look at this process, it also says that I don't like it when things aren't going my way, so I get engaged and get involved. And I do think that it will increase our involvement. And I'm not bothered about the minutiae and the detail. It's just the concept that says to a community, here is what's happening in your community. And I, you know, in the opposite of what my colleague says, in my community, you want to be involved. And parents have not felt that they're as engaged in the system or the school district as much as they can. And I see this as a way of engaging not only the parents, but the greater community, and that includes the business community, because they often feel like they too don't know what's happening within our school. And I think it's a good vehicle. The details can come later as to what the grading process is, but I can use for bringing it forward to this committee, and I, for one, will support it.
Thank you.
Representative Backman?
Thank you, Chairman. Committee, I think you should know that by my very first U.S. history class, a long time ago, Senator Adams was a junior in that class in U.S. history.
And so time is
interesting, but in terms of education, it's kind of interesting. We've all been told this sort of thing.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. When we take a multiple choice test or a true false test, you know, it's said sometimes that you should go with your first reaction and not think too much later and go back and change answers. And so I must say, Senator Adams, when I saw Senate Bill 1329, my first reaction was kind of like the Representative Edwards, kind of a healthy skepticism as an approach. And a couple of reasons for that, I think. One, I was thinking about all the changes that are coming about in public education, and I think many of us would approve of them. I think like our educational reform, we passed the charter school bill. We passed out of this committee Senate Bill 428, which is the so-called Student Bill of Rights. We have big-time K-12 funding issues. We have a quality education model out there that's been looked at and examined. And so there's an awful lot of change, and this would be another pretty significant change, I think. And then I talked to a number of people, teachers, former associates, and they're a little bit nervous about some of the things that are coming down the pike here. Some of the more vocal ones call it teacher bashing. I know we've all heard that, and I don't think anyone intends to do that. But I remember my good friend next door to me in the hall when Senate Bill 880 passed, he said some dramatic thing like, "This is the end of public school education in Oregon," which, of course, it is not. And he's also very concerned about Senate Bill 1180 and 1181, and understandably so, I guess. But anyway, I do have these feelings of skepticism, and I determined that I would wait. I would not read this bill in detail. I was going to wait and come in and try to keep an open mind and let you convince me, Senator Adams. And so I have this sense of skepticism, but I'm trying very hard to be open and see what happens.
Madam Chair, Representative Backman, I appreciate that. I do respect that this is a change from the way that we're currently doing things. And is there risk associated with it? Sure, there's risk associated with it, but that's what life is about. And frankly, I don't believe that you get constructive change unless there's motivation for change. And this is one way that perhaps provides that. I still believe very strongly that people will approach this in a constructive manner, not a destructive manner. That's fundamental to bringing this forward, is that belief in how people approach it. But I do respect the difference. And I have to say, even though I didn't do real well in U.S. history,
what grade did you get?
I think my grade on that one was a passing grade, where I wouldn't have to call an improvement plan, but it would have been just right on the line. But it did give me a great appreciation for U.S. history, and I've always appreciated it.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator.
Great. Thanks very much.
Mr. Rose?
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I want to add one other list or item to the list that Representative Backlund reported on, the number of changes being so forward. We're waiting to appear down the hall where you're going to create a new school board and give us a lot of instructions from the state level if it passes. And that's related to all of this discussion. But specifically to this bill, we support the concept of the bill. The State Department has been moving for some time to create a performance report. The material that's in the proposed report card is all good material and ought to be available and ought to be studied and ought to be used to help generate community support and ought to be communicated to more than just parents. We do not agree with the concept of using letter grades, and we believe that letter grades do not communicate what you want to communicate. Letter grades have a meaning based on 100 years of experience. A C means something to me based on how I got involved with C's or B's or whatever. The department has already laid out a measurement scheme that has a six level thing that each will require different kinds of intervention in terms of improvement of the school, and we think that the measurement system, the reporting system, ought to be consistent with that process. Does a C in a Lake Oswego school mean the same as a C somewhere else? Does a C even mean the same to a set of parents in the same school? Is a C acceptable in Lake Wobegon? Everybody was above average. Is a C an acceptable grade or a B an acceptable grade? And our concern is those letters bring with them preconceived notions. If you use a system such as is being laid out as a six-scale system, you're going to have to read what does the word excellent mean to know what it means. You're going to have to know that an excellent school is such and such, a good school is such and such, or whatever words you want to use. And our concern is that the traditional ABC, and even and Senator Adams set up there when we had this in the other committee, and we're really pretty good on these issues, and he referenced the progress report. And did I think that was okay? It's okay. But when I read the progress report, my first reaction when an item gets a B or a C is, I wonder what that really means. Because a B or C means something to me, and it may or may not mean the same thing to John. That's our issue. Communication with the parents and the broader committee, by the way, made me more important than the issue with parents. More parents know about what's going on than one gives them credit for. But one of our problems in the public education now is only one household out of four has kids in our schools. It's the other three quarters that we need, and they're getting all their information from 30-second and 45-second news stories at 6 o'clock about shootings or something. And so our communication issue, which is extremely important, isn't just with the parents, it's the broader community. And our issue, at a minimum, the bill ought to be amended, but Terry Adams is to be commended in that he said the State Department and the sheriff stakeholders need to come up with a criteria. He's not telling us what an A, B, or C is, he's approached it really well. He just chose them one little part to do wrong, and I want to have to correct it. And at a minimum, you should leave the choice of what is the nomenclature that's going to be used to announce the performance of the school to that same group of folks. And quite honest, I tell you, Mrs. Adams agrees with me, too. With that, I'll quit and answer.
What would you recommend as
well? I want to say that the six things that we've already got in the performance that schools have to do, they're really good ones. If you've read the stuff yet, those in the top group are going to be asked to display and work with other schools and show what they're doing, why they're a good school. And on down into the sixth one, we're going to intervene very heavily with the school board and the administration and the teachers on how to help them improve their schools. And so there's a program already built. It's not built on what words we use to describe it. It's built on what do you do to help the lower performing schools perform better. That's the issue. How do you help kids learn? And where they're not learning fast enough or well enough, you got to find ways to help them. And I would like you to somehow connect the measurement that we announced to the press. And by the way, the other thing with the letter grades is the press the press is fundamentally lazy, and they won't get beyond printing that it's an A, B, or C. And with all due respect, you look like...
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3246 and close the work session on 3246 so that we can come back tomorrow and address this important issue. With that, again, I thank you for being here, and we are adjourned for today. See you tomorrow.
Based on how I got involved with C's or B's or whatever, the department has already laid out a measurement scheme that has a six level thing, and each will require different kinds of intervention in terms of improvement of the school. And we think that the measurement system, the reporting system, ought to be consistent with that process. Does a C in a Lake Oswego school mean the same as a C somewhere else? Does a C even mean the same to a set of parents in the same school? Is a C acceptable in Lake Wobegon? Everybody was above average. Is a C an acceptable grade or a B an acceptable grade? And our concern is those letters bring with them preconceived notions. If you use a system such as is being laid out as a six-scale system, you're going to have to read what does the word excellent mean to know what it means. You're going to have to know that an excellent school is such and such, a good school is such and such, or whatever words you want to use. And our concern is that the traditional ABC, and even and Senator Adams set up there when we had this in the other committee, and we're looking pretty good on these issues, and he referenced the progress report. And did I think that was okay? It's okay. But when I read the progress report, my first reaction when an item gets a B or a C is, I wonder what that really means. Does a B or C mean something to me, and it may or may not mean the same thing to John? That's our issue. Communication with the parents and the broader community, by the way, may be a more important an issue with parents. More parents know about what's going on than one gives them credit for. But one of our problems in the public education now is only one household out of four has kids in our schools. It's the other three quarters that we need, and they're getting all their information from 30-second and 45-second news stories at 6 o'clock about shootings or something. And so our communication issue, which is extremely important, isn't just with the parents, it's the broader community. And our issue, at a minimum, the bill ought to be amended, and by the clear answers to be commended, in that he said the State Department and the sheriff stakeholders need to come up with the criteria. He's not telling us what an A, B, or C is. And that is, he's approached it really well. He just shows them one little part to do wrong. And I want to have to correct it. And at a minimum, you should leave the choice of what is the nomenclature that's going to be used to announce the performance of the school to that same group of folks. And by the way, I want to tell you, Mrs. Adams agrees with me, too. But that I'll quit, man.
What would you recommend as
a method? Well, I want to stay with the six things that we've already got in the performance of school cafeteria. They're really good ones. If you've read this stuff yet, those in the top group are going to be asked to display and work with other schools to show what they're doing, why they're a good school. And on down into the sixth one, we're going to intervene very heavily with the school board and the administration and the teachers on how to help them improve their schools. And so there's a program already built. It's not built on what words we use to describe, and it's built on what do you do to help the lower performing schools perform better. That's the issue. How do you help kids learn? And where they're not learning fast enough or well enough, you got to find ways to help them. And I would like you to somehow connect the measurement that went out to the press. And by the other thing with the letter grades is the press is fundamentally lazy, and they won't get beyond printing that it's an A, B, or C. And with all due respect, you look like much somebody here. Seriously, they don't have time and don't want to spend the time. They've got to do other things. And the ABC will become just a letter and may or may not communicate what you ought to communicate about McNary High School or Shirley Elementary or whatever. And so we would like to see the nomenclature related to our performance requirements already underway in the district improvement plan, et cetera.
And the average parent isn't going to understand the 6 points. You know, unless you made that out. I think his idea is to make it understandable. Parents already understand A, B, C, D. I understand your stand. It means different things to different people. So I think we have to establish a baseline that, you know, we want quality in our schools. How does our school measure up to this school over here? And are we getting the best product that our students
have?
Take on what's
yes, right. That's what the center's arguing. But I want to argue, or no, excuse me, I want to present to you. yes, the parents understand what a lot of grade means. I had my son and his friend in the back seat driving home from school last week, and they just finished finals. And they're talking about their grades, and one said, oh, I think I'll get this. And the other one said, well, I will too. It depends on how if the teacher curves it or not. A C in one situation is a C, and C in another situation is a C. But it may not be telling you the same thing. But we all know what a C is. We think we do. And that's our concern, that you'll very easily say it's a C school plump, and you won't look beyond that. If it's a good school or some other nomenclature, I understand the word, but I need to know more about it. You have a better chance. The press will have to print what does good mean or whatever the nomenclature is. The press won't bother to permit, or excuse me, to print what a C means because everybody knows.
Thank you. Arvin, could you just give us some more information? Currently, schools, I understand most schools do school improvement plans, is that correct?
All schools are required to do school improvement plans, yes, sir.
And so I guess I'm still trying to figure out if you get a D or lower, you have to file that with the superintendent. Those school improvement plans currently, they just stay in the district, is that correct?
I think so. Yes, sir. Under the way we're headed, if a school gets in the consolidated district improvement plan, if districts are rated lower, the state is going to intervene in a different way. So there's a process being put in place to do that.
If we were to do the letter grades, and I mentioned this either in my testimony or comment, I mean, in A, I'm not sure it's even achievable. I mean, let's just say in the standards, because if the state 90 and above, I assume that's the grading curve, and let's just say that stays there, hitting 90% of all kids is going to be awfully challenging, if not impossible, which I would say that's 100. But I don't know. I mean, my sense is that's what is subjectivity, and I'm concerned about applying the grade itself and how there's some rationale there. Teacher experience, go ahead. That's not a performance measurement, and that's years. So,
Madam Chair, if there's all of the material in the report card is good information that ought to be known about the school. The senator has left to the department and this committee to decide how to apply grades to them. So I don't. When I first read the bill, I got a little uptight about what is an A in teacher experience. That isn't quite what he has in mind. He has them figuring out how to collect that material and put it in to say this is A. And that's my point. That it won't communicate. It'll communicate what people always thought an A was. If you were always graded, when I was in school, before they had curves, an A was an absolute 95. Now an A moves up and down depending on how you use the curve and so forth. And my point is that how I view an A, Reggie Backlund views an A who's been in the business for a long time, and somebody else who hasn't been in the school for 38 years, how they view an A or B or C will be different. And I'm trying to argue that we need a system that forces good communication. It is easy and short and does convey a message. I'm just not sure it's accurate.
What if you look at the ranking within the district, what you saw where you stood relative to your peers in that district? It's just numeric, not grade. I think the grading is tough at best. And if you get an overall grade, I'm not even sure how they come up with that. Grades are, I don't know how you measure it. It seems like ranking might be a good way to go.
Madam Chair, Rick, ranking on what? Each individual item?
Where they stand, let's just say.
Again, Rick Edwards, I do think there's some merit in the concept of deciding that a school is overall is in this position, that some things will be better at and lower and so forth. And so I don't have any difficulty with that. In fact, we're headed that way with the improvement plans anyway. what is their overall performance, and in what parts are you going to improve, et cetera. My concern is not the labeling of the school. It's the issue of labeling the way that it will actually communicate what we want to communicate about. And ranking, in theory, if you label schools, they can all be excellent in the school district. If you rank them, they can all be excellent, if that's the way you measure. And the lowest school in one district might be a really, really good school, but it is the lowest ranked school. And that sends a message you also don't want to send.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking of sending messages, what is the psychological effect of A and B students going to a C or D school? I just got to thinking about that, you know, had I been in that situation and my school had gotten a C rating or a D rating, just extrapolating that, what's the effect of students knowing that information about their school?
I'm sure, Director Wilson, obviously what I say now is speculation. I never thought of it in those terms. I think another way to look at it is what is the, how do kids feel about their schools if they are not kept clean and they're run down, et cetera. They don't treat it with respect and value being there. I would speculate that if I'm in a C or a D school, I might not have very much respect for the school, et cetera. But this is speculation. I never thought of it that way. That's a good thought.
Thank you, Chair Minister. Ozzie, talking about grades, it is interesting when we label it, but historically, if Senator Gordley gets an A, I think everyone says that's excellent. B is good, C is average. B is poor, and F is failure. College admissions people have to accept GPAs of individual students as they go to school, and from when I last heard, the single best criterion for student success in college was their high school GPA, and more important even than SAT scores and some other things. So I think if we just throw out letter grades, I think most people would understand the B is good, and then we could certainly use the information to further cement that. Your point, though, is certainly well taken, but about what does it mean? But I think most people instinctively have an idea of what these letter grades do mean. In terms of the grade, there are some things in the report card here that maybe should not be graded. Professional experience, teacher's average years of experience, that probably shouldn't be a grade. Now, the information is good. I think it's good to know that the average teaching experience in the school is 18 years. That would be very helpful, but it shouldn't necessarily be a grade. And the percent of teachers with a master's degree, I think that's very significant. It could be, but I don't think it should have a grade. So, I mean, this thing could be reworked a bit. And it could do what Senator Adams hopes it would do. And I don't know, we also maybe could take a B, it's a 3-point, average these things together and come up with maybe an accumulative GPA, so to speak, as a student at school. I don't know. But the grade, maybe the letter grade is the easiest, and maybe that's the best. I don't know. I think a grade is something that most people kind of have a feeling that they understand what it means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like Representative Backlund in his earlier remarks. My initial impression of this bill was not positive. Senator Gordley supports this. That gives me pause to think. But I'm also influenced by a conference Senator Gordley and I went to, Senator Harkin and I talked about last week, known as the Milken Foundation. And it was really quite a, I'm sure both of you are familiar with that foundation, the annual awards to outstanding teachers in the United States. Four in Oregon were chosen. Part of their award is to receive a $25,000 check from the Milken Foundation. The interesting part for me, or I should say instructive part for me, was when we met as an Oregon delegation, Senator Gordley and I, Superintendent Stan Bunn, and then these teachers. And it was the kinds of comments that I had anticipated a teacher might say after the 95 session and the 97 session, Senate Bill 750, Senate Bill 880, Measure 5, and some of the negative press to be polite teachers have got in the legislature in the last three sessions. Such as, and what's important to understand, these are teachers who are the best teachers. These aren't teachers who anybody can accuse of being complainers or problems. These are recognized as the best of the best teachers. And to a person, they've discussed flirting with leaving the state of Oregon because of the attacks on them, the profession, not them personally. They all made the point that they will succeed, not to stand in Senate Bill 880 or 750 the pair. They're not concerned personally, but they feel like they have been captured and shattered and attacked and villainized. And that really struck me hard because, as I said, I suspected that, but then these were actually the best of the best saying that. And I guess I just had the thought that we don't think enough here about what the impact of what we do is on the teachers in the classroom around the state, and the impact they have. And so I guess I see what's happening possibly, potentially with this, is that we are going to create a state where the best teachers have other professions they can pursue. And that was one of the points that we heard at this conference, that these people are highly skilled, highly trained, highly educated, and choose to teach because teaching is an honorable profession. That's what they want to do, point at which they won't do it anymore, and they'll move on, and then that slot will be filled by somebody who might be called mediocre. And I am concerned with that message that they're sending. And so though something like this might be attractive, I'm going to, just like representing background, I'm going to listen and try to keep an open mind. But that is the concern that I carry with me more than I have in the past. I think to a degree I've always had that here, but I don't think I've had that message so powerfully given to me before by such an elite group of teachers, people who really didn't have an axe to grind. This is just truly how they felt. So I'm going to be looking at issues like this with those four teachers in the back of my mind.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Harvey, just a question, because everyone's talking about it in the more in the abstract as a negative tool, and conceptually I also see a positive aspect of, and you spoke of the greater community. Could you elaborate more? The greater community does not feel engaged, I think, in what's going on in our educational system. I attended a conference that lasted for 2 weeks, and it dealt with planning and how do the education community bring in the greater community to assist not only in providing additional funds, but to make them a part of what's happening beyond the school board issue. And could you talk, because you mentioned that in some of your testimony, a little more of how you see this particular tool assisting in getting the greater community involved in a positive way?
Madam Chair, as I noted, 3 out of 4 families are directly involved with our school. We no longer have local levy elections, so we don't have superintendents and school personnel doing coffee clutches and so forth around talking with their community. We have very little good interaction with the community, and we need to resurrect that in some way. And one of the ways is to give good performance data and information about your school and give it in a way that the press is required to use it and people will pay some attention to it. The other issue I believe that people need to pay attention to is that by the time you come back here, those of you who come back in 2001, all of the information that's proposed to go on the report cards will be on the website and available to anybody who wants to look at them about every school. And people will develop report cards or whatever kind of thing you want. And I think it's in our best interest as a state to develop the information in a way that tells the story accurately about schools and not wait for somebody in England or France or New York or California or in our own state to come up with a way and present it the way they want to present it on the website. Communication is way different than it was 25 years ago. So I view this as a positive tool, and the only quarrel we have with it is that we think the concept of using a nomenclature that has a long history may or may not communicate the message that we want to communicate. And I'm assuming we, meaning the state legislature, other elected officials, school board members, and all school people, and the community, want good information communicated about their schools. And I view this as a tool that moves in that direction. And it is every bit as important as the man or woman who owns Gulberson Motors, who hasn't had a child in school for 15 years, knows what's going on in their school and knows it accurately as it is for myself, who has a son in high school at the present time.
Question to you, Audrey. Can I ask this to the Senate President? I mean, media, and again, I don't disagree, this can be used as a tool communication. But it also, I think, and the question to you is, how might we in this building use it? Because I think in the end, that's how you're going to, if we're going to have some plan about how we're going to improve these schools, then I think somehow you got to bring it back to us. So we're the ones who overarchingly have the biggest impact on how we progress as a state on schools.
Madam Chair, in the best of all worlds, we're to bring this data back to you, or it would be sent to you, and would focus your attention on the program needs or accomplishments of schools, and not on 4.72 or 4.87 or 4.34, a number that, I think it's interesting, all the debate over what's the right number, and the quote in the paper this weekend, the speaker says, you don't know how I feel about that number. It doesn't make any difference how you guys feel about a number. The issue ought to be the performance of our schools and the program, and this may provide that vehicle to get you to focus more on that particular issue. We ought to be talking about program and needs, and then say, oh, those are our program and needs. What are the resources required to meet them? And in some of our schools that are C's, and by another thing to the Senator, the President's credit, he doesn't propose punishment. He proposes identifying the needs and how you're going to fix them. And I think that's important. And that's the way it ought to be used. It remains to be seen whether it's used that way.
The last point, which is true, if it comes back, you got a school improvement plan that goes to the superintendent, somehow it has to come back to us, but then you come upon us to ask so that you can help the school. I mean, that, yes. To me, we're just missing the point. I have a piece of paper to describe the performance of schools, but it's meaningless unless you got some plan or some backstop as to how you can help. Now, maybe if there is a lack of community out there that's not engaged, I don't think you could do that. But on the other hand, unless you have a purpose and trying to drive towards some goal, it doesn't do anything, I guess, in my opinion. That's where I have a little difference on this. Maybe ahead of its time, but on the other hand, maybe it will help us drive the debate in this way.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that was a question mark at the end of
that.
Thank you. I want a quality of education that leaves no student behind. I believe we all want that. But a part of the reality in my community is that we have allowed mediocre schools to develop, and we have allowed for mediocre teaching. We have allowed that. And we've allowed that to happen not just over a few years, but in my lifetime, I can go back 30 years. I can talk about three decades that I am totally familiar with and that affects a particular community and a whole group of students, some of whom are low income and many of whom are people of color and not always on the same. And because we have allowed some mediocrity, we need some intervention. We need some tools that can help communicate what is truly going on in these schools. And I see this as a tool. Does the language need to be fine-tuned? Yes. Does it need to be fine-tuned in terms of the support? Yes. But again, my concern is that, yes, our schools are working well for a lot of students,
but we have a whole lot of students that our schools are not working for, and so we need to be focused there as well. Otherwise, we are going to leave students behind, and we can't do that. We can't allow that to happen.
And Chair Sandberg, I agree with you 100%. The whole school improvement, school reform debate, we should never have labeled it school reform. We should have been talking about we have to be more successful with more children. All of our kids deserve the opportunity to be successful, and we've not done that. We have let things go as a society, not just the school, but as a society. And I don't disagree that this effort, focus on performance, will draw attention to where performance isn't occurring. And our only concern is that the ABC doesn't focus the argument the way it has to be focused.
And ABCD does raise questions. It causes one to say, what does this mean? And to take that step further to find out what it means for a particular school. It's a starting place. And it's a starting place for, again, I think about schools in my particular district and in the neighboring district. I can name schools. And unfortunately, I can also name teachers. And I can name administrators. And I can name principals.
That was probably my subconscious leaking out or hanging.
Again, my point is, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, so to speak, but the point is that where there is mediocrity, it needs to be rooted out. And we have not had enough emphasis on that in our state and in too many of our communities. And, I, again, appreciate that the former president has his finger on this particular poll. And I think there's some irony that it is a proposal that's coming from him, and that it's a proposal that is in alignment with the movement of activist educators of color and activist parents of color in the Portland area who have been looking for a tool like this from this body. I just find some deep irony there.
Do you think that this would be viewed as a negative by teachers? Do you think they would view this as some sort of an attack on them if you get a report card last year? Do you think that's how it would be seen?
Madam Chair, I don't think I'd care to speculate. I don't think that most of them, none of us are saying, well, not do the report card. The performance report thing has been on the table and being worked on. So I think that the concern would be, does the report card accurately report about the school that I'm in?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I suspect some would, some wouldn't. But I would think that the good and caring one would be more interested to do what it's supposed to do than afraid of it.
Mm-hmm. Marshall, did you have any comments?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. And I come at this from a little different perspective. It seems to me that what we're trying to do is to move away from the old bell curve. That is, the lump of schools, school district students are going to fall in the middle and they're going to be average. On the left-hand side, you're going to have a few that are going to be towards failing, and then you're always going to have some folks over on the left-hand side of that bell curve that are going to be up. On the other side of the bell curve, there are going to be folks a little bit to the right of the hump that are going to be above average, and then you're going to have the A's over on the other side. But I think there's a phrase that we use in public education that all students can learn. They just learn at different rates and levels. So we're moving away from the bell curve, which creates this assumption that you're going to have a few that are going to be at the top and a few that are going to be at the bottom, and we flatten that out to create a slope, which says that different kids, different schools, different school districts are going to be at different places on that slope, but they have the potential of moving upward. And I think that the approach that the department is taking, and assuming that you've all seen the latest iteration of a draft from the department called their District Effectiveness Model, which has gone through a great deal of work with school administrators and superintendents, And in fact, Joanne Flint from the department is going to be presenting this to our summer board conference, which tries to bring together all the newly elected school board members from the state to talk about this idea and how it can be completed and worked. But what this does is lays out
my point is, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, so to speak, but the point is that where there is mediocrity, it needs to be rooted out, and we have not had enough emphasis on that in our state and in too many of our communities. And, you know, I, again, appreciate that the Senate President has his finger on this particular poll, and I think there's some irony. That there is a proposal that's coming from him, and that is a proposal that is in alignment with a movement of activist educators of color and activist parents of color in the Portland area who've been looking for a tool like this from this body. I just find some deep irony there.
But do you think that this would be viewed as a negative by teachers? Do you think they would view this as some sort of an attack on them if we did a report card like this? Do you think that's how it would be received?
I don't think I'd care to speculate. I don't think that most of them, none of us are saying, well, I'm not doing a report card. The performance report thing has been on the table and being worked on. So I think that the concern would be, does the report card accurately report about the school that I'm in?
Mm-hmm.
I suspect some would, some wouldn't. But I would think that the good and caring one would be more interested to do what it's supposed to do than afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Marshall, did you have any comments?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Marshall representing the Oregon School Boards Association. And I come at this from a little different perspective. It seems to me that what we're trying to do is to move away from the old bell curve. That is, the lump of schools, school district students are going to fall in the middle and they're going to be average. On the left-hand side, you're going to have a few that are going to be towards failing, and then you're always going to have some folks over on the left-hand side of that bell curve that are going to be up. On the other side of the bell curve, there are going to be folks a little bit to the right of the hump that are going to be above average, and then you're going to have the A's over on the other side. But I think there's a phrase that we use in public education that all students can learn. They just learn at different rates and levels. So we're moving away from the bell curve, which creates this assumption that you're going to have a few that are going to be at the top and a few that are going to be at the bottom, and we flatten that out to create a slope, which says that different kids, different schools, different school districts are going to be at different places on that slope, but they have the potential of moving upward. And I think by the approach that the department's taking, I'm assuming that you've all seen the latest iteration of a draft from the department called their district effectiveness model, which has gone through a great deal of work with school administrators and superintendents. And in fact, Joanne Flint from the department is going to be presenting this to our summer board conference, which tries to bring together all the newly elected school board members from the state to talk about this idea and how it can be completed and worked. But what this does is lays out what's called a six-level review continuum. And rather than grades, level six, and I suppose you could call it one or whatever the top is a pattern of strong performance gains. Then the next level, strong performance gains, and satisfactory performance, inconsistent performance, low performance, and a pattern of low performance. And I think that this approach gets away from the bell curve and shows that individual schools have the potential of moving upwards. And in response to a question that Representative Gordley had, those school districts with at the lowest level a pattern of low performance, it says a state review team consisting of peers and led by an Oregon Department of Education staff member will conduct a diagnostic audit. Written report presented to local board and community. Mm-hmm. District has 60 days to present an action plan with measurable indicators of progress. Action plan monitored on a quarterly basis by both the state and local district. If the district has not made significant progress 1 year later, parents will be given the option of placing their student in another school or a neighboring school district with state funding following the student. So that's a pretty strong sanction, I think, for those school districts that don't show some improvement. I would encourage you to use Senate Bill 1329 to direct the department to continue with this approach, involve the stakeholders in a way that can create, from our perspective, not only a hopefully stronger engagement from the community, but to give the folks I represent, those locally elected policymakers, the tools that they need to begin to ask the right questions and allocate resources to schools that are in the greatest need. I think there's a great deal of potential here, but let's not tarnish it by creating a stigma where you have, as Representative Wilson suggested, A students in C schools or B teachers in D schools. I think that sends the wrong message and doesn't create a valuable tool that I think Senate Bill 1329 has the potential for. I would gladly be glad to respond to questions.
Any questions?
Yeah, I was concerned. I know that grades and grade systems and things get there some way of evaluation, but I want to give you a personal experience and just get some idea from you. Mr. Marshall, I haven't been on a school board of a private school where we had a certain teacher that seemed to be doing quite a good job. It became apparent after a time that the other teachers were not doing much of anything at all. We got a couple of new teachers in those other areas, and they were extremely good. And it became very apparent that the one that had looked like they were good where it was an F, they were fairly average. But it looked like she was doing an excellent job in comparison to others that were not performing at all, basically. It turned out they had a little more personality and were able to keep it under wraps a little longer, and the school board hadn't been very insightful in the way things were going on. And it came to me, trying to work to coming on the board new and trying to work to get something going where there was kind of confidence and some things happening in the school, that really here was an average teacher that had been looked upon for a long time as being a good teacher who wasn't cutting it in comparison to the other two who were fairly outstanding. And I'm sitting there thinking, as a board member, how in the world do I relate to this? We found an average teacher out of a job simply because she's now being shown up by a couple of outstanding people, when in reality, if you go out into the world turns on average people. It's not the real outstanding people that are maybe doing 90% of the work. It's the average person. And I'm still in a quandary over that, and I see this setting up that very thing. I see a situation whereby we could get a very average grade because you're being graded on how many computers you've got per student rather than over here on mostly what the student is actually learning. And frankly, I don't care if there's little stuff places on the floor and a little paint chip here and there and a few things like that. If a kid's being challenged to learn, I don't care if he's sharing a computer, whether he's sharing it with one, two, or three, or four people, or whatever the case might be, but what does he actually come out of it knowing? And so I see some value in this, but I also see it heading down a road where you could have some very, very fine grades over here and results from the students. You have some very, very poor things over here because you had maybe some outstanding people working the program, or you had a group of kids whose parents were behind it, and again, watching that school, there were times when you couldn't get anybody to do anything with a class. And the class before it had no problem, the class after it had no problem, but there was a certain situation where a key group of parents and things like that weren't interested in cooperating with the school or anything else, and you just have a bad apple sitting there amongst the rest of it, and yet it was a pretty poor way to judge the overall production of a school. Because out of that same school during that same period of time, he had a kid that, by all means, he should have not been able to do anything, but he's a troubleshooter for NASA. Not just somebody that's doing the average NASA work, but when they run into a problem, they come to him. And he didn't get it having one computer and all three kids and all that kind of thing. He got it because he had a desire to learn, and he went out and did his thing. You know, if somebody challenged him someplace, and his parents or a combination of what it was. And so even though this rating might be good, there could be schools because of the situation of their building or their financial situations or just parental situations that might be turning out a very good product but could never get a decent grade.
Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, I think you've described pretty well the inherent danger of creating boxes, whether they're defined by letter grades or some other, what we believe is more by objective criteria used in the district effectiveness model, that it creates boxes and assumes that everything has to fit neatly in a box. The best analogy I can think of, when this is over with, when this legislative session is over with, there will be a number of interests in this building that will create report cards for legislators. And they will look at your votes on bills and give you a percentage grade suggesting you're 95%. We used to do that. We don't anymore. But one thing we found that we ended up with no friends, but it doesn't tell the whole story. It doesn't tell about your understanding of the issue, your accessibility, and a variety of other relatively subjective kinds of judgments that we on this side of the table use to gauge how you do your job. And, you know, I think that gives you an idea of the concern we have over trying to create a narrow little box and then allowing folks to make judgments based on so little information. So there is an inherent danger, and I hope that you would go the more, what we would consider a more appropriate route by directing the department to continue the work with the district effectiveness model, because I think coming out the other end is a tool that we can all use to make schools better and help students learn, and that's really what we're all after.
Madam Chair, I appreciate Mr. Moss's comment because, mistake, you got a 7% on one of those grading reports one time, and that's haunted me ever since because I should have had a 0. I kept taking that as a badge of merit.
John, could you just ask you the same question I asked Ozzie and the Senate President? I mean, how can we use this? I mean, because I think it's a tool that they don't describe, and I think can be used positively in the community to try to leverage action in the district. But I also come back, the bus will come back here, or should. And I guess I'm trying to figure out, do you agree with what Ozzie was saying, that it may begin focusing us on a path? Because I think, again, this has some merit, but we in this building are the ones that generally have the biggest control knobs on what how successful our school is.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, you have, by statute, dictated the standards that you expect schools in the state to achieve. We would hope, from our perspective, that you would set those standards, allocate the resources, and then get out of our way. Holding us accountable for those results, this is a way that you can look at measurements on how well school districts and individual schools are doing relative to the standards you set. You can make judgments, I think, about what's the problem that we have so many schools at a level of, let's say, where was my list, only satisfactory or inconsistent performance. You may realize that it's a resource issue. You may realize that it's another substantive policy question. It could be labor management questions. It could be a variety of things over which you have control. I'm not sure, and I certainly don't agree that the legislature has now become a 90-member school board. I think that there's a delineation of certain roles and responsibilities was struggling with those and trying to decide exactly where the line's at, we're not afraid of being accountable. In fact, there are a number of mechanisms we're working on in this building that we think will enhance the accountability and give you the tools you need to make judgments and fulfill your fiduciary responsibilities, assuring that the money's spent wisely. I think it'll be information that you can make judgments about, but it's really, I believe, going to be a tool for individual school districts and the folks that I represent that you've allocated responsibility to set policy for local school districts. And that is, give us the tools to begin to ask the right questions. We'll see the data from other, I'm assuming there will be some kind of a complete report from the Department of Education, and we can begin to look at what's wrong with this school when we seem to be spending the same dollars as another school. We have the same sort of socioeconomic mix, yet this school students are doing so much better than this one over here. I think that this kind of information, will, and as well as other information we're now gathering through the database and so forth, will begin to give us the kinds of tools we need for the folks that I represent who aren't professional educators. They're the strongest link that the community has to the public school system, that will give us the tools to begin to ask the professional educators that we hire the right questions. Why is it? What's wrong? You tell us professionals how we can increase our student achievement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question that I'd like to direct to Representative Winters as well, because she's chairing the panel that's looking at the quality education model. And I'm wondering, both of you actually, do you see a relationship between the measure before us and that quality education model and the direction that we're being pushed toward? Which is, again, quality, trying to achieve a quality education for every student.
Madam Chair, I see conceptually, yes, that it can fit in as one of the tools. It has not been presented to, you know, the overall committee, and I was sitting here thinking of reproducing the report card and sharing it with the members of the community. As you know, the model is looking at trying to refine and strengthen the quality education report that we receive. And quite frankly, we're looking at all the linkages of how by the time the next legislative session occurs, we will have recommendations of what quality education in Oregon and the cost should be or can be. So I think definitely this has a place in that whole discussion. I, quite frankly, am very excited about the concept. You know, the details are something else. I think we can work on details on how we get there. But certainly we need to do a much better job of presenting to the public what we're about and why we're about it. And I just see this as another tool of doing that. I think I said earlier, we can no longer operate education in the mystique that we had in the past. The public does not know enough about who and what we are, why, and yet they're paying the bill. And I think, you know, in business, from the business perspective, you make sure that you let the public know that, in my case, that my ribs are St. Louis Tech, or that we've got the best. And I think we need to also do that same thing as it deals with education. So this I see as a tool that another tool that we can use in the quality ed model. And John may want to tag on to that, because he and I have talked about some things that we needed to do.
Madam Chair, Senator Gourley, I tend to there's a lot of talk about accountability. Everybody wants it, but nobody quite can figure out exactly what it is. We can't get our arms around it. There's nothing to grasp. And I've tried to compartmentalize it by talking about accountability for resources, accountability for cost, accountability for performance, and accountability for expenditures. And I think, obviously, it's this body that has accountability for resources, because you're now allocating to school districts our marginal dollars. It used to be the fight was over whether or not basic school support was going to be 35 or 40% of school costs. But we got the marginal dollars community by community, and that obviously created a connection that we no longer have as Ozzy suggested. But accountability for performance, I think, is this piece. How can we show you how we're doing and then be accountable for that, either to the Department of Education or through this the sharing of information more accountable in our own community. Accountability for expenditures, I think, is going to come with the database initiative project. We're going to have more and better information. We're going to have expenditure data by school level and maybe even by grade level. And again, that's going to be a tool that we're going to be able to use to begin to ask the right questions about how can we can do a better job with school improvement. I view the quality education model as more of a mechanism to get to accountability for resources, because its purpose, after all, is to come up with what's the appropriate number. And I think if you look at the genesis of that, the former speaker came from the last legislative session very frustrated. You know, it was a number, well, it's never enough, it's never enough, it's never enough. Let's think about the kind of quality we want and see if we can't quantify that in a way to come up with what is the appropriate number. And I think that's, and hopefully the work that Representative Winters does over the interim will refine that, and we can come up with a better measure so that when you folks come back next session, you'll have an idea, this is what it takes to maintain the current quality or program or current service level, whatever you want, and then you can make policy and political decisions about whether you want to go beyond that. So I think the model is more of a dealing with accountability for resources, where this is accountability for performance. And then we also have a couple other ideas that are moving through the process about how we can be more accountable for costs. And that falls largely into the labor management questions, since 80 to 85% of our budgets go for personnel costs. So if you think about all those different ways of determining what accountability is, all these things begin to fit together. And I think obviously that responsibility is shared. From our perspective as locally elected officials, we have accountability responsibilities to our community and certainly back to you. And you as statewide elected officials dealing with statewide issues have a certain degree of accountability to assuring that the resources are available to carry out what you've determined to be the standards that you expect schools to achieve.
I really appreciate the way you've responded, and I guess in my own mind, I tie accountability for resources and performance very closely together. I can't separate them. It's how the dollars are spent and whether how they were spent had a result. You know, was it effective? And was it effective in the classroom and effective with all the students in the classroom? So I don't separate. I wasn't hearing you separating them, but I just want to clarify that I see them. They came together.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. We have closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 1329 and open the public hearing on House Bill 3307. I apologize, we're constrained on time here. If you want to just give us a brief overview and then we'll call the witnesses.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3307 engrossed as physical education to the list of subjects included in the definition of content areas for purposes of the Oregon Educational Act of the 21st century. And you have before you a copy of that bill plus the staff measure summary out of the House Committee on Education and also a copy of the potential impact statement prepared by the Legislative Fiscal Office. And would you like to go ahead and say testimony?
John Dillon?
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dawn Billings. I'm with the Oregon Department of Education. I'm coordinator of the Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services. I am here to discuss the fiscal impact on the bill. And before you, we have requested for fiscal year 99 $289,660. And these funds would allow us to bring on board an education program specialist and an office support person to support that specialist. The work that we see being completed by the education specialist would be to develop the statewide standards. And we know we would like to acknowledge at this time the work that's already been done by teachers around the state in developing some draft standards for physical education. Well, this is a very good start. Many of these standards would not meet either the community standards or the standards that are in place for statewide assessments, and a substantial amount of work will be required to be done on these standards to make them fit the purposes for which content standards have been defined in the law. A second filter that we're going to use when we look through these standards, or would anticipate using as we look through these standards, is that we must ensure that the standards are acceptable statewide from community to community.
Okay. Any questions? Kirsten, I have one question for you on the fiscal analysis that shows $272,710 $289. Is there anything?
That was for our fiscal year 2001-2003, sir, and 99-2001 is the
$289,600.
Oh, we have 253, 452. Let me take it. Oh, I see what it is. The fiscal office recommended 0.875 FTE, which I assume means that we hire a little later on in the year.
That's correct. We assumed that there would be a delay in the hiring until we phased it in. I think we allowed about 3 months for hiring. That reduces.
All right. Thank you. Alina Hoff, open.
Okay. That's they said picture speaks 1,000 words, so I got this for you.
My name is Alita Hass-Holcomb, and I'm from Corvallis. I'm here to remind you that quality physical education is not a luxury, but must be regarded as an essential part of every child's educational components, K-12. And regarding House Bill 3307, the development of statewide standards in physical education, members of the committee would like to suggest that failure to approve the legislation would cost the state of Oregon a lot more than the amount needed to facilitate the development of statewide standards and benchmarks in this vital curricular area. I have a copy of what I wish to say to you, and in it I said, unfortunately, Don Zeron wasn't going to be here because he was on jury duty elsewhere in the city, but he is here today. Anyway, regardless, Don could tell you in dollar figures the projected health care costs for tomorrow's Oregonians if comprehensive school health promotion continues to be ignored. Quality physical education is a major part of comprehensive school health and is blatantly being dismantled across the state because schools are triaging their resources, focusing on, quote, what has to be done, unquote. And what has to be done is being defined by Oregon's SIM timelines. The curricular area of physical education is currently left out, and its lack of SIM status has already cost the students of Oregon too much in the way of program cuts around the state. The value of quality physical education programs based on national standards and age-appropriate benchmarks is not in question. Having met with COSA and OSBA representatives in May, there was consensus with House Bill 3307 supporters that quality physical education standards and benchmarks are critical for Oregon students. The Oregon Department of Education has also recognized the need to improve the status of physical education. In meeting with Bob Stolick and in meeting with Dylan Flint, I am encouraged that the Oregon Department of Education truly doesn't want to see quality physical education programs in the state continue to fade away. In order to stop the erosion, school districts need to have a clear message that quality physical education is under the umbrella of, quote, what has to be done. The umbrella is currently the SIM. And until that umbrella covers physical education, students in Oregon will continue to be shortchanged. Education of the whole child is at stake here, and your committee really holds the key to moving forward this legislation that could curb the deterioration of physical education in Oregon. Also, your committee holds the key to moving forward legislation that can move Oregon toward a state of wellness. as this legislative session gets closer and closer to July, I'm feeling less and less encouraged that the advocacy voices of children are being heard. Please listen. Oregon's future needs quality physical education, and statewide quality physical education will not happen unless there are statewide quality standards and benchmarks. These standards and benchmarks must fall under the umbrella of the SIM so that the Oregon Department of Education
My name is Alita Hass-Holcomb, and I'm from Corvallis. I'm here to remind you that quality physical education is not a luxury, but must be regarded as an essential part of every child's educational components, K through 12. And regarding House Bill 3307, the development of statewide standards in physical education, members of the committee would like to suggest that failure to approve the legislation would cost the state of Oregon a lot more
than the amount needed to facilitate the development of statewide standards and benchmarks in this vital curricular area. I have a copy of what I wish to say to you, and in it I said, unfortunately, Don Zierung wasn't going to be here because he was on jury duty also in the city, but he is here today. Anyway, regardless, Don could tell you in dollar figures the projected health care costs for tomorrow's Oregonians if comprehensive school health promotion continues to be ignored. Quality physical education is a major part of comprehensive school health and is blatantly being dismantled across the state because schools are triaging their resources, focusing on, quote, what has to be done, unquote. And what has to be done is being defined by Oregon's SIM timelines. The curricular area of physical education is currently left out, and its lack of SIM status has already cost the students of Oregon too much in the way of program cuts around the state. The value of quality physical education programs based on national standards and age-appropriate benchmarks is not in question. Having met with COSA and OSBA representatives in May, there was consensus with House Bill 3307 supporters that quality physical education standards and benchmarks are critical for Oregon students. The Oregon Department of Education has also recognized the need to improve the status of physical education. In meeting with Bob Stalick and in meeting with Dylan Flint, I am encouraged that the Oregon Department of Education truly doesn't want to see quality physical education programs in the state continue to fade away. In order to stop the erosion, school districts need to have a clear message that quality physical education is under the umbrella of, quote, what has to be done. The umbrella is currently the SIM, and until that umbrella covers physical education, students in Oregon will continue to be shortchanged. Education of the whole child is at stake here, and your committee really holds the key to moving forward this legislation that could curb the deterioration of physical education in Oregon. Also, your committee holds the key to moving forward legislation that can move Oregon toward a state of wellness. As this legislative session gets closer and closer to July, I'm feeling less and less encouraged that the advocacy voices of children are being heard. Please listen. Oregon's future needs quality physical education, and statewide quality physical education will not happen unless there are statewide quality standards and benchmarks. These standards and benchmarks must fall under the umbrella of the SIM so that the Oregon Department of Education can officially advocate for them. And I'd be willing to have questions at this point.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Dr. Cleveland?
My name is Minot Cleveland. I'm a physician up in Portland area, and I'm also father of two children in the North Clackamas School District. I'm pleased to be here, Chairman Minnis and members of the committee. Let me share a couple things with you. I've been involved in advocating for quality physical education in schools for 7 or 8 years, partly out of my work as a physician. I'm an internist. I take care of adults, but I'm particularly interested in prevention, health promotion, healthy lifestyles, and have seen or experienced personally the benefits of regular physical activity and playing sports, and advocated a lot with my patients. I also have been very interested in children's issues around physical activity because I work with adults to make behavior changes, and I think most all of us can understand that it seems that the older we get, the harder it is to change behavior. So I'm very big on trying to help kids get off to the right start in terms of physical activity. And the other personal interest I've had in this issue, again, comes from what happened in my own school district in the early 90s when there was a significant cutback in the physical education program for North Clackamas students, and this resulted in what a number of parents felt was a decrease in the quality of the physical education that was being offered to our kids, and so got interested in trying to promote it within the schools. Let me briefly just share first a little bit of bad news and then some good news related to the support for Health Bill 3307. The bad news is we're not doing real good with our kids in terms of their health in general and in terms of physical activity. The national and state data suggests that about 50% of children do not get enough physical activity to promote health, growth and academic performance, because I hope you're aware there is evidence that the more physically fit kids are, they often do better academically in school. Also, unfortunately, 40% of children, this is a national study, 40% of children 5 to 8 years old have a risk factor for heart disease, high blood pressure, being overweight, high cholesterol, or being physically inactive. Do you recall heart disease, heart attacks are number one killer in this country. 5 to 8 year olds, this is first, second, third grade year graders have a risk factor for heart disease. How has it come to this? What's important to know about risk factors for heart disease, besides knowing what they are, is that they tend to track into adulthood, meaning if you're a child who is has high blood pressure or has high cholesterol, or now the studies have conclusively shown that if you are physically inactive as a child, these risk factors tend to track into adulthood. So the inactive child is likely to become the inactive adult and the inactive employee of a company who will therefore have higher health care costs. Unfortunately, as Alita already alluded to, over the past years, this has happened in Oregon, it's happened nationally, support for resources devoted to physical education have been hurt by budget crunches. I mean, I've been in a number of school board meetings in my own district and other districts where when the fiscal budget crunch comes, what's one of the first things to go? Well, physical education resources are one of the first to go. So unfortunately, that has been a trend that this bill helps to, has taken place, this bill helps address and stop. The last time the national survey looked at the amount of time devoted to physical education in this state compared to other states, Oregon's ranked 33rd in the nation in terms of the amount of time devoted to physical education. Again, more bad news. The good news is that we can do something about it, and I firmly believe that this bill is an important step in the right direction. Runner, cardiologist George Sheehan once said, "We're all athletes, it's just that some of us are in training and some of us aren't." I shared that with Representative Sinceri in some of these discussions. So there's still hope. I believe there's hope for all of us, even us old adults can make changes in our lifestyle. But we also know that early habits, early patterns of behavior, whether it's in terms of physical activity, nutrition, starting to smoke in adolescence or not starting to smoke, all those have tremendous impact in terms of what kind of a life someone will lead and what kind of health status they will have and what kind of health bills they will be presenting to their employer down the line. So from that standpoint of helping kids get off to a good start, this bill, I believe, is critical. What it does is elevate the status of physical education up to the second tier, if you will, in the education reform or SEM process, so that there would be state standards, but the assessment piece would be developed and administered at the local level. So local control is definitely preserved. We are very pleased that in the course of bringing this bill forward and through this House Education Committee that we worked out a compromise. Again, it's been a pleasure to work with the Oregon Department of Education, with COSA and OSBA, who have come on board to support this bill in its current form. It's also, I want you to know, from a public health standpoint, supported by a number of important public health agencies, the American Heart Association, I'm past president of that, the American Lung Association, American Cancer Society, the Oregon Coalition for Promoting Physical Activity, which I'm state chair of, and the Governor's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, which I'm also a member of. And these public health organizations have come on board to say physical education needs a higher status in the whole education reform effort. I think one of the best things that I do outside of seeing patients and trying to help people achieve healthy lifestyles is in the from late winter to early spring, I volunteer to coach basketball in the Putnam Youth League up around the Milwaukee area. I coach my daughter, I coach my son. I've been doing this about 4 or 5 years. And probably now I've been coaching 7th and 8th grade boys, an interesting group to coach. And it's been great. I mean, I grew up in Indiana where and played sports in high school, basketball kind of gets in your blood. So it's fun to sort of teach and coach and work with these kids. I must tell you that I'm struck by how many of these kids are overweight, out of shape, have not developed their physical skills to the kind of degree that one would expect. In 4 or 5 years of coaching these age kids, I would guess that I've had maybe, you know, 8 or 10 per year. I would guess that I've had maybe 2 or 3 that will have a chance to make the varsity basketball team at Putnam High School or Milwaukee High School, one of the high schools. And that's great. I believe in competitive sports. I think there are great advantages for those who can participate. The problem is that we have not provided the opportunity for all of our kids to promote, to participate in physical activity. So those kids that aren't going to make the varsity, they are less likely to stay active. There's a huge drop-off in physical activity participation when kids hit adolescence. And I think part of that is because they've not acquired the habit of physical activity, partly because of the lack of enough quality physical education, and because they stop making the organized varsity teams, and there's not enough opportunities. And when that habit is not already established, then there becomes problems. So I believe that while sports in schools and competitive sports in high school are, in a sense, the tag program for physical activity, those with more natural athletic ability and who really want to pursue that, they get to participate. Physical education up through K through 12 is the opportunity for all kids to participate, all kids to develop their physical activity skills. I again want to emphasize that I think this bill is a great step in the right direction. We're pleased to be have the bill supported by COSA, OSBA, and the Oregon Department of Education, and the numerous public health agencies that have done so. Senator Gordley made a comment about rooting out mediocrity in discussion of the previous bill, and I can tell you that the quality of PE being delivered now varies widely from school to school, district to district, and this bill that, again, introduces state standards and eventually assessment will, I believe, go a long way to rooting out any mediocrity in terms of the delivery of quality physical education in the schools. Pleased to be here, and I hope you will consider this bill quite favorably. I'd be happy to answer any questions that I have.
Representative Edmonds?
Thank you. Thank you for coming today, Doctor. I think actually my daughter's teacher knows you, Carolyn Johnson.
Oh.
And says, well.
Oh, great.
She wanted me to.
She's great.
She's a big advocate of this concept of physical education is critical to learning.
Yes, absolutely.
One's life. I guess, you know, in fact, the chair just handed me this, and one of the struggles that schools can have is it costs money. I couldn't think of a better way to spend some money. In fact, this isn't a lot of money, $250,000, according to our fiscal analysis. In the long term, this will pay dividends. And so we're looking for ways to invest money that the health plan costs. I mean, you can go down the line about how costly it is just from a health standpoint, if this is a step in the right direction to help the health of our citizens, whether they're young and old. I think this is a great step. And I think putting this in the standards makes a lot of sense because, as you described, this has gotten short shrift in the schools, and one could say, unfortunately, that's probably been done in a prudent manner. Unfortunately, a lot of schools just can't afford a physical education teacher, and so they're having to either creatively have non-PE instructors, and I guess that's what the intent of this section in the back is. Was there some discussion in the committee that had this bill about doing an inventory about how many school districts have lost physical education teachers? Because I think it's a specialty. In fact, maybe you can comment on, to get a physical ed degree is it's very onerous. I mean, from an academic point of view. So is that something you contemplated as far as when you discussed amending the bill that you would actually take in kind of an inventory of where are we and who's doing it and how many are left? Because I think the trend is we've been cutting quite dramatically.
Right.
Statewide.
Chairman Minnison, Representative Edwards, appreciate your comments and in response to your question. I think that would be part of the assessment process and kind of figuring out exactly where we are. I mean, there is some data that the Oregon Department of Education has about what percentage of students are being served by specialists versus classroom teachers. Again, I think an advantage of this bill is that it doesn't specify to a district how quality physical education will be taught. It doesn't say you've got to have so many specialists. Would set standards, and then the district would be responsible for meeting those standards in whichever way they can. Physical education specialists certainly have much more training in terms of delivering quality physical education to schools. And then when you survey a lot of classroom teachers, they are very uncomfortable teaching PE. They don't really like it. They don't like to go there, and they usually don't go dressed down in the gym and then come back to their class. You know, they just don't do that, and they really don't feel comfortable many of them don't feel they have the skills to do a good job, and it makes them nervous when they have to do it. But the reality is much of physical education in the state is being delivered by classroom teachers, and that will probably continue for some time. And again, this bill doesn't specify how it will be delivered. I would mention that Carolyn Johnson, who's been a volunteer for the Heart Association, is one of these, I think, remarkable and pretty rare classroom teachers who has really taken on physical activity as something important for her grade school, whatever year she's taught. And she's developed a national walking program to get first, second, third graders out walking, takes them out walking 15, 20 minutes a day, and teaches them around physical activity. Unfortunately, Carolyn Johnson is, I mean, too rare a bird, but has really done a great job. Again, in terms of the fiscal impact, whatever number 250 or 280,000. I'd like to have that piece of change in my pocket, but in the grand scheme of things, I mean, someone described it as kind of budget dust. I mean, in a $4+ billion education budget, this amount of money to have such an impact, which I believe will be significant on our kids, I think is well worth it. And I would be very concerned if we, as a society, and you all as legislators, if we can't find less than $300,000 to get physical education back on the map, then that would be very disappointing and shocking to me. I mean, we must be able to find this money to do this.
Madam Chair, Senator
Curtis? Thank you very much. I would just say I agree with you wholeheartedly and really appreciate all of your testimony and the previous testimony as well. Thank you for the top 10 list. And what we're being asked to consider is making physical education a requirement as part of the certificate of initial mastery on the same level as fine arts and foreign language, and I support that. I don't know what the prospects will be for coming up with the dollars to support the intent of the legislation, but I will certainly be one who lends my voice in support of the negotiating team taking a look at this issue. I will do that. And I will also share with you that I've received several letters from constituents in support of this measure, and I'd like to quote from one of the letters I received because I think it just underscores everything you just said. This is from Charlene Daniels in Northeast Portland, and she says, "Our children receive messages that they should be healthy and fit, but we don't instruct them on how to do so safely and enjoyably. They miss the opportunity to develop a positive association with physical activity. Instead, they unfortunately see too many adults being temporarily physically active only as a means to an end when they decide they need to lose weight or if they have a health concern. Most adults would agree the health habits they learned as children are reflected in their lifestyle as an adult. Without quality physical education, our children are much less likely to learn that being regularly physically active is empowering, makes you stronger in many aspects, and gives you a foundation from which all your other skills and abilities are made more secure." This letter is a reflection of several others that I received, and it certainly expresses my feelings about the subject.
I appreciate that, those comments, Senator.
Sue, do you have one final comment?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just wanted to point out that the fiscal impact we've been talking about is the fiscal impact to the Department of Education to do what's required under this bill, which includes developing statewide content standards. The fiscal impact on the local districts, which are required to administer the assessment, you're not able to determine until the department develops the content standards. I just wanted to point out that.
Isn't there also an impact, Madam Chair, to the teacher standards and practices submission, albeit small? There is an impact there. So.
Dr. Stegman, thank you for coming down and taking the time.
I appreciate the opportunity very much.
Thank you very much. With that, we are